Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 4:37 p.m. and that is New York summertime. Well, I thought I would kick off today with the euro. It has broken down through the 112 area. This has been, I think it's reasonable to say, widely anticipated when we see that it had been encountering resistance at just 1 cent increments all the way from January of this year. This is just an extension of the downtrend, which has been reasonably consistent. We definitely had an anomaly in March, but it was quickly rescinded. And then the failed upside break resulted in the lower side of the range being retested. Then the consistency of the trend kicked back in. Well, if that's the case, well, we can anticipate that it's probably going to drop back to 111 before we get the next rebound, which should encounter resistance around 112. These are very systematic ways of looking at the market. It's obviously not something that we can pin our hats on, but as long as this consistent trend remains intact, then that's what we can anticipate. A consistent trend is a trend in motion. As long as the trend remains consistent, that's what we can anticipate from the market. So this also is representative of the relative strength of the US economy, and the resulting strength of the dollar, but also the relative weakness that we're seeing, particularly in Germany. This weakness in Germany is not not really a reflection of what's going on in the wider European economy, but rather just how dependent Germany is on auto sales in China. So when we look at the outlook for the euro, then it's almost like a derivative of what we're seeing in terms of auto demand in China. Well, obviously, in the last couple of days, we've had the Shanghai Auto Show. What was perhaps most notable about, at least everything that I've been reading about, has been the substantial number of new car companies that are coming out in China with plans for electric vehicles. And that's rather significant because China is positioning itself to be not only the world's largest automotive market, but also the number one producer of automotive batteries. And production of more than 3 gigafactories is well underway. Tesla is even building an additional factory that it will wholly own, I think is probably the best way to describe it. And the market is still waiting on Tesla's results as I'm recording right now. But what this is also representative of is the future. And Germany does not have a battery factory. It certainly doesn't have the kind of plans to become wholly self-sufficient in battery production. This is really quite a significant problem for Germany, because it's not simply that you have companies like Daimler, Volkswagen, BMW that represent the automotive sector, but it is all the ancillary intermediate companies that supply them with parts. Well, electric vehicles have substantially fewer parts, and that is going to really have a massive effect on the supply chain for German industry. As if that wasn't enough of a problem, well, China is also introducing rules that very much mirror what was introduced in Beijing about 5 years ago. In Beijing, if your car plate ends in an odd number, you can drive on certain days of the week, and if it is in an even, it ends in an even number, you can drive on the others. Well, that's being introduced in an increasingly large number of Chinese cities, which is having an impact on demand for cars. Well, that's feeding through into the German automotive sector. So not only are they faced with this existential threat from the rise of electric vehicles, but then they also have this problem with demand for their current vehicle lineup. Well, the Chinese market was in positive territory today, and it does look like it's consolidating, and this consolidation is relatively similar sized. If we look at, for example, some of their larger, and sorry, I clicked on the wrong thing there. If we look at their larger automotive companies, well, BYD, Geely Automotive have broken their respective downtrends, and that I think is a view of the future. When we think about the outlook for some of those Chinese brands, well, they already have access to the largest market in the world, and they're going to become increasingly more aggressive on exporting their vehicles to the rest of the world. When we look at, for example, Volkswagen, that's also broken up and out of its range over the last few months. Well, let's say that even the last 9 months. Now the big question is whether it is going to be able to hold that breakout, and it was off its lows in here today. What these companies need is a weaker currency, and that is what they're getting now from the euro. So that is potentially going to be beneficial to the shares in nominal terms for Germany, but it's of particular benefit to the periphery of Europe. I think that is where we have the clearest example of an opportunity when we think that these peripheral markets such as Greece or Spain, Portugal or Italy, they are still at very close to or in proximity of their lows. Well, that is where we can perhaps see some value starting to come through. The weakness in German economic figures is also something that is likely to stem the potential for any kind of tightening from the ECB. So that's another significant issue, that there is no prospect of the ECB tightening if Germany is not firing on all cylinders, regardless of what else happens on the periphery. And it, in fact, greatly increases the potential that we're going to get additional stimulative measures. So that does suggest we're going to have continued pressure coming to bear on the euro. Now, when we look at the pound, it has also started to drop now below the 130 level. Now, the bigger question is whether this is pricing in dollar strength or any particular pound weakness. I rather think that there hasn't really been much of a change in terms of the outlook for Brexit. And when we look at the pound versus the euro, well, the pound is now right in the region of 115. This is a much better arbiter of where the perception of value resides, and it is at least steadying from the 115 area. This continues to look like a first step above the base. And as long as it is holding the move above the trend mean, I think we can continue to hold that conclusion. But the fact that we are seeing the pound weaken somewhat in dollar terms, then that should be at least a partial tailwind, at least for the FTSE 100. Now, the FTSE was in negative territory in here today, but it remains on a recovery trajectory. What I also think is important is that the FTSE 100 had broken up and out of what was effectively a 17-year range. This continues to look like a first step above that very long base formation. It has been able to do that against a background where the Europe Stock 600, which includes UK shares, has been ranging below 400 for almost 20 years. And it is only now just coming back up towards that 400 level. Well, obviously there is the potential here that this entire range from 2015 through to 2019 has been nothing more than a consolidation, and a much lengthier consolidation at that relative to what we saw in 2000 and in 2007. And that holds out the prospect of a successful break on the upside in a manner similar to what we saw for the FTSE 100 back in 2017. When we look at what's going on Wall Street, well, the S&P 500 was pretty quiet in here today, and it is right in the region of the peak from back in September. I do think that it's rather likely we are going to get some pause in consolidation. We have a short-term overbought condition. It has rallied incredibly impressively since the lows put in just before Christmas. We are also approaching May, and generally speaking, the period between the end of May and September, October is the worst part of the year in terms of volatility. We're also in the third year of the presidential cycle. It is quite normal to have a somewhat larger pause in consolidation in the first half of the year. That certainly hasn't happened this year, at least not yet. But to think that we are going to see this market rally persistently for the entire duration of 2019, I think would be the triumph of hope over experience. But even still, the fact of the matter is that this has been a liquidity-fueled bull market over the last decade. There might be some risk of some pause of consolidation, and that is likely to be a buying opportunity. And the conclusion that people have come to, that is in fact the case, may be one of the things that is helping to support the market at these levels. But the other point is that because it's been liquidity-fueled, and we have essentially seen that the Federal Reserve has thrown in the towel. They're not going to be raising interest rates. They're going to stop reducing the size of their balance sheet. The ECB is extremely unlikely to embark on any kind of tightening and may even have to adopt quantitative easing. The Chinese have given the green light to their banks to start lending to the private sector once more, and we've started to see that exact the I suppose the best way to think about it is the expected response to that kind of statement has been visible in the stock market. Then, even when we think about somewhat smaller markets like India, well, there has been a new government-friendly head of the RBI installed ahead of the election, and he has done what he was appointed to do, which was to cut interest rates. And that is translating into the stock market steadying now again, and it has pushed back up to the upper side of its range over the last few months. What that is beginning to suggest is that we are not going to see any additional tightening by central banks, and that there is, in fact, a much greater potential that we're going to get fiscal stimulus. Now, when we look at the total assets of central banks, well, that had unwound all of the expansion put in over the course of the period from November through to January, and it has now unwound it all. And the reason it has been able to unwind it all and move to a new reaction low in here today has been because of the strength of the dollar. The Federal Reserve has not cut interest rates yet, and it's unlikely to cut interest rates this year, but it's also unlikely to raise them. That is, I think, perhaps stratifying the And that's not the word that I'm looking for, but it is going to hold or putting or I guess putting the central bank policy in a holding pattern. There is nobody going to move, and then that is contributing to continued strength in the dollar. The fact that Wall Street is in the region of its all-time peak and the dollar is firming is contributing to Wall Street's outperformance in currency-adjusted terms for everybody outside of the USA. Well, when we start to look at some of these other currencies, well, the Australian dollar is coming right back down now to test it's coming down to test the 70-cent level, and that was a really quite a dynamic move that we had in here today. So That is holding out the prospect of a break on the downside. There is still a clear progression of lower rally highs. And as long as that remains the case, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the downside. Well, if the Australian dollar is trending downwards, then that should act as a potential tailwind for the market, which was able to push to a new recovery high in here today. So that's a substantial move on the upside in nominal terms. When we look at a currency adjusted ETF, well, then that gives us a more rounded outlook for the performance of the market. So the very clear downtrend in 2014 and 2015 has not been unwound. We have had a reasonably meaningful move off the lows, which is quite similar to the kinds of moves we've seen in much of Europe, but it has been considerably less impressive than the nominal price appreciation of the ASX 200 would suggest. But where that is likely to be of benefit is to the resources sector, since the majority of their earnings are priced in US dollars. Well, it was in negative territory in here today, but I do think there is the potential for continued outperformance if the Aussie dollar continues to trend down, and most particularly if it breaks the 70 cent level. Now, if we stay with currencies, because that is certainly where we've had the big moves in here today, well, the Japanese yen is back above, or the dollar is back above 112 against the yen, and that is a new recovery high. It's been ranging below 112 for most of the last 2 months. That represented the lower side of the overhead trading range, and this is a reasonably impressive move back above that level. Well, when we then think about the second section index, which has historically been a lead indicator, it was in mildly positive territory in here today. It needs to push back above that 7,000 level to, I think, really start to reignite animal spirits and to suggest that we're back in a demand-dominated environment for Japanese assets generally. Now, the strength of the dollar has obviously had an effect on some commodity prices, but I thought it was particularly interesting today that gold was in positive territory. It is back above the $1,275 area. This is right in the region of the trend mean. It's a logical area where we might anticipate some support starting to come back in. The fact that it was able to muster a gain in here today against a background where we had really quite an impressive move by the dollar in a significant number of currencies is a testament to the fact that what people are starting to think about gold is that it represents a hedge. Not simply a hedge against inflation or deflation. I really do think that that is far too simplistic. But rather, it is a hedge against the worst inclinations of central banks to debase their currencies. Whether that is during an inflationary environment or a deflationary environment is rather beside the point. It's when you get negative real interest rates that you can then clearly have a very bullish case for gold, and that can happen in either an inflationary or a deflationary environment. That's why we had a very significant bull market in the period from 2000 to 2011 during what was essentially a disinflationary environment for most of that period, and most particularly after the financial crisis in 2008. So I think that's something that people are starting to hedge, because there is evidence of inflationary pressures mounting. When, for example, you look at the costs for retail operations to turn a profit, then in the retail world, commercial rents have not been trending downwards. And because of the strength of the dollar, imports have been increasing, tariffs have been increasing, postage rates have been increasing. The kinds of fees that companies like Amazon charge have been increasing, and wages have not been keeping up with that, but wages are rising, and that is also representing a cost for businesses. Some of those costs have obviously been m moderated by the Trump tax cuts. That's really only a US phenomenon, certainly not a phenomenon everywhere else. What that is all suggesting is that there is evidence of inflation. It's just that it's not really appearing in the official figures. When we look at the performance of high yield, well, the fact that it has broken the downtrend but was in negative territory in here today, I think there is at least some rationale for thinking about the high yield spreads as being a barometer for the availability of credit in the corporate sector. It is currently around 360 basis points as of yesterday's close. Now, this does represent the upper side of the underlying base formation between about 2017 and 18. If we can see this spread pushing back above the 400 basis point level, well, then that would be an indication that credit conditions are starting to tighten up again. That would, I think, be a catalytic event for some profit taking in the stock markets. This is an area for stock market investors to start to think about. Well, we know what happened last time. We know what happened when these indices got back up to their peaks back in September. So nobody really wants to be the first person to pay all-time new highs, but that is obviously going to be something that people who were buying the Nasdaq, for example, have been doing over the course of the last few weeks. But when we think on that, the fact that there is this short-term overbought condition, this is a logical area where we can anticipate some pause and consolidation. The Philadelphia Semiconductors Index has been really quite emphatic on the upside, and it was in additional positive territory in here today. But there is definitely a short-term overbought condition as it is testing the next round number around 1600. So I think it is quite likely, even in the most bullish of scenarios where this breakout is sustained, that we get at least some consolidation and potentially even have it come back towards the 1400 point level to unwind that overbought condition. Well, when we look at Tesla, this is one of the companies where people have had very bearish attitudes, and their ability to fund themselves is very much tied to the number of cars that they can both produce and sell. Well, the share is now right down to the $2, $250 area. They are touting the, and we just don't have their earnings yet, but everyone is expecting them to be bad. That the there have been videos circulating over the course of the last few days about cars breaking into fire. There is also the fact that not only has their production figures come in below expectations in the first quarter, but that there might be an issue with demand. Now, if that's the case, that's really potentially terminal. But on the other side of the equation, there is the additional potential that Tesla is really only one of two companies that has got a lot of data on how to automate vehicles. Now, they are probably pushing timelines in an aggressive manner to try and get a product into the market before anybody else. They may not win that battle. There is the slower, more methodical efforts by Waymo, which is part of Alphabet, that is also in the market here. Well, the share was in negative territory in here today, but again, this is another share that is right in the region of the peaks back in July. That rally in July was capped with a very clear downside key reversal and followed through on the downside the day after. This is an area where I think people would logically start to think about some consolidation. So I think I've made that point sufficiently well that it's quite likely we're going to get some consolidation in stock markets before too long. But the broader picture for stock markets is that we're still in a bullish environment. If central bank policy is skewed towards accommodation, then that is likely to be of benefit to investors over the medium term. Now, oil prices were pretty much unchanged in here today. This continues to represent an uptrend that is likely to be of benefit to the energy sector generally. When we look at the kinds of conclusions that investors have been coming to over the course of the last 3 or 4 months, there has been a clear tendency to favor the beaten down energy sector. Well, the S&P 500 energy sector is now right in the region of its trend mean, and it was in negative territory in here today, so that is not responding in a particularly dynamic manner to the uptick in interest for the oil market. When we look at MLPs, then they are also right in the region of the trend mean. I'm rather more favorably disposed to the MLP sector. It's certainly a lot cheaper than other parts of the energy sector. And if the USA is going to pump an additional 4 million barrels a day by 2025, then that is going to have to get transported, and a lot of that is going to get transported by pipeline. That's a clear infrastructure play rather than, and it's a volume play rather than a price play. So I think that this is an interesting sector, but it has rallied rather meaningfully over the course of the year so far, and there is the risk that we're going to get some consolidation. It has been pausing here in the region of the trend mean, and I think a lot of people would be a lot happier if we get a dynamic break up and away from this $10 area. Well, if we simply then look at what's been going on in terms of the market, what was, I think, also interesting in here today was that lumber prices were limit up. And that is confirming at least near-term support in the region of the December low. That was an upside key day reversal. If we get follow-through on the upside tomorrow, then that will, I think, help to really confirm that we have seen a low of at least near-term significance. This is a rather interesting level. If we go back and look at a lot more history, then we can see that the $300 area has been an area of both resistance and support over the course of the last few years. But the $400 area was the upper side of the longer term base. So prices have pulled back into the longer term base, and there is a likelihood now that we're going to probably range more than trend over the course of the next while, but at least prices are starting to stabilize. There has been a lot of mixed data about housing in the USA that on the one hand, people were touting that the housing starts had been well ahead of expectations in the first quarter of the year, but that prices have been moderating. Well, that's also a reflection of the latter stages of a cyclical bull market. And what I do think the medium-term prospects are is that despite the short-term risk of some consolidation, that we are in the third psychological perception stage of this medium-term bull, and there is a clear potential for acceleration, not least because people have really concluded that the Federal Reserve has got their back and that there is very clear evidence now of a Powell put. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.